Hey, everybody.
Good morning.
It's November 11th, 2020. It's episode 118.
Day four in the failed state.
It's, I don't want to go down this road very much, but it's also Veterans Day.
It is Veterans Day.
It's always set. Veterans Days are always proportionally sadder to how crappy society is.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, we should introduce ourselves. I'm Mark Van Suyk. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. Ron, glad you liked the intro. Another shout out to Max Wolpert, Sarah Hubbard.
Man, I love that new intro.
Yeah, for putting the music together. Mark Van Steenwyck, our visual director and producer. Yeah, I had nothing to do with any of it. So
I love that. You know, we say this all the time, but I feel so much hope when I hear that.
I know.
Inject a little bit of hope before we rip it away.
Yeah, but then we close. But then we close with a little bit of hope too.
It's like taking your at the end. It's like your soma pill. You know, things are gonna be okay. speaking of soma pills, which is a reference to the world. Where people take these happy drugs. We're talking about the prophetic movements. And, yes. You know, I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination. And so we use the word prophetic in a very different way than what I think most people experience in the United States, given that one of the predominant Christian expressions in the U.S. and around the world is Pentecostalism or the charismatic movement. And within those movements, you have people who claim to be prophets who speak on behalf of God about what's going to happen. So they're predicting the future. And a bunch of them prophesied that Trump would be president.
Right. And one of the big jumping off events that inspired this episode, of course, was this very exciting prophetic charismatic moment where this woman, I'm blanking on her name now,
Paula
White? Something. Yeah, that sounds about right. Paula White.
Who's
very white. Prayed that angels from Africa would come and deliver the election to Trump.
I don't.
Which has so many levels of problematicness to it.
What is it about African angels? Like, I haven't really investigated this. Like, I used to, when you'd cast out demons, sometimes you'd call upon different angels for support, and then you'd cast demons out to the arid places. Like, there'd be all kinds of things. So, but I've never heard of anyone specifically saying, Zelzebor from Antigua, come forth. Like, I don't know, I should have watched the clip to be more informed before this. This episode.
Well, and of course this generated all kinds of appropriate both wrath and mirth from particularly my black friends and colleagues, you know, and there were memes like, wait, African angels are black? That was one of my favorite ones. But yeah, I mean, this phenomenon of the speaking in tongues and the spirit thing is very, very interesting. I do not come out of this background at all, either from childhood or since I've been involved in Christianity. And I told Mark that I would tell my one really hilarious speaking in tongues experience, which in the mainline world. So this nationwide project that I was on staff of called the Youth Ministry and Spirituality Project. And so we were working with these churches from all around the country. And one of them was a Presbyterian church from Opelika, Alabama.
Is that real?
Favorite names. It is totally real. Yeah. Opelika, Alabama.
That just has so many beautiful syllables.
Right? I know. It's great. And so, so as part of this project, we were inviting pastors, youth ministers, lay leaders who are involved in the youth ministry to come to learn about spiritual practices and different things. So the wife of the pastor came several times, and this woman was what we would call a big woman. I mean, she was like 6'3", 280, you know, and she could have played like line for, you know, the Alabama football team. This woman was big. And so we're in the chapel service and we're having silent prayer time, right? So we're having silent prayer time. We're all sitting there. And suddenly this woman starts to stand up. And she stands up. She's got her arms up, you know, outstretched. And she starts speaking in tongues. And, you know, here are all these mainliners who are not used to this at all.
Just terrified.
Just freaking out. And actually, it was all I could do not to break out into hysterical laughter because it was so funny. But then she did the thing of where not only she spoke in tongues, but that she then interpreted it.
Yep.
So she's, you know, going off and, you know, Beelzebub language or whatever it is, you know, some form of Elvish or something. And, you know, and then she starts lecturing, you know, translating this. And then after a while, she gets done, she sits down.
Yep. But I always felt like I was always too much of a literalist for my Pentecostal church, because I always thought, you know what, someone else should be doing that interpretation. Otherwise, how do you know? And so
that's what we were all saying afterwards. And the staff, like, wait a minute, doesn't it say in the Bible that somebody else is supposed to interpret it? You know, we were sort of all confused.
But even still, let's take that as, you know, to me, tongues plus interpretation is like an inefficient way of just prophesying directly. Different gifts, you know, that to me, the whole point of someone else interpreting tongues, if you believe that, which actually I kind of still do. I just feel like we have the wrong Pentecostalism is the wrong container for those things, because it's become, and at least in the United States, become too tied in with authoritarianism. But let's say what she did was accurate. Like, then you test it, right? This is the whole thing. Like, well, we have to test it by its fruits. So here now we have this situation where I don't know how many thousands of people prophesied Trump was going to win. He didn't. And so now, instead of people being like, wow, I was wrong, I'm so sorry, I need to question my integrity, it's like the things I've seen are, I was deceived by the devil. Okay, that one I can go with that one. The other one is like, no, he did win. This is proof that the Democrats are fraudulent. It's because God's not wrong, so the Democrats are wrong, and they're trying to steal the election. And then even some, my favorite is like, you know what, though? This stealing of the election is part of a diabolical plot. And to me, there's a reason I like that last one in particular, from the realm of just being curious and interested, is because it clicks right into QAnon. Diabolical plot, QAnon, it adds another whole layer. And so we get the full smorgasbord of conspiracy wackiness.
Yeah, and you know, I guess my thing about this, well, maybe we got a lot of good comments coming in, so maybe we'll jump to that first. It's always good when the comments come in early.
Yeah, just going back to CK, the comment about Veterans Day, we're all soldiers in the war against oppression, so technically, yeah, it's every day is Veterans Day and the Lord's Army. Laura writes, good morning, so please be able to watch live today. Just putting that up because a lot of people do listen after the fact. And so it's nice when people are able to join us live.
Yeah. Hey, Laura.
Yeah. And just for those of you who never get to watch live, know that we know you're out there and we're glad you're listening. Whenever we have attended a church where speaking in tongues happen, I have told my husband or partner, do not look at me or touch me when I start laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is awkward. Like, even in my most Pentecostal of times, I recognized it was awkward. I felt bad for people. And I always felt bad that there was not more work done explaining and helping people feel comfortable. It was almost seen as like the more outlandish the church could be and the more shocking it was like more proof that the Spirit was there, which is not very pastoral to me to frame it that way. No. Con writes, I speak in tongues. I'm just not fluent. Little squinty tongue emoji. I don't know how to mimic that. Adam writes, the beautiful thing is that it really was angels of Africa, Southern North Africa and Central South America who rushed to the aid of the United States. I can be on board with that. Thank you, angels from other places who care about us as the people of the U.S.
Well, and I think he sorry about literally like all the black people that voted and.
Oh, I see.
Biden. Yeah.
That works too. It works on all the levels.
Yeah, and you know, and that's what was the bizarre paradox of this comment, right? That the people of African descent were the people that in many ways delivered the election for Biden. And so it just made this praying, right? I mean, why would angels, you know, you have to ask, right? Like, why would angels from Africa want to vote, help Trump, right? I mean, that was sort of the absurdity of this whole thing.
I think there's kind of like, I don't know, just trying to channel my thinking from my younger days. I think there's some racism in there, and this is how it is. Angels in the most demonically oppressed places are the most strong and able to do warfare. And so I think calling specifically on African angels is a way of saying they have to fight the greatest darkness. So it's racist. So there's no way that it's not just all the way. It's racism all the way down.
Right. Racism all the way down.
Jeremy writes, all the prophecies I've seen of late are that Trump is still going to win. Same. I've seen
There's a lot of those.
This is simply a test of faith to weed out the faithful, unfaithful. Yep.
Yeah. Well, and see, so this is one of the very, I mean, this to me brings up the interesting point that I'm fascinated by with the speaking in tongues thing. And I was asking Mark a bit about this before we got started. So, you know, if I start making unintelligible utterances, mm-hmm. and I then say this means X, Y, or Z, it is immune from proof.
Yeah.
Right? It's immune from proof. And so, you know, I like this woman that stood up in the service and then told us what this all meant. You know, so you are now taking something, and of course, this has been a big criticism of scripture and religion. You know, every atheist says the same kind of thing about the whole deal of religion. So you're taking something that is immune to any kind of outside scrutiny, and you're saying, this is God. You know, I'm speaking for God. And you just have to believe me because there's no way of knowing if that's true or not. Not only is there no way of knowing that this came from God, but there's not even any way of knowing what I said, right? I mean, somebody can interpret, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, you know, I could interpret too. I could just make some stuff up and say whatever I wanted to and say, well, that's the interpretation. And so this is where, to me, as a spiritual practice, I mean, I don't know, you know, what was going on back in biblical days when this got written about. I don't even know what people think is going on when it happens in modern times. But this is one of my biggest concerns about this as any sort of legitimate spiritual practice, is that it is completely open to fraud. Right. I mean, that you really have no way of from the outside making any sort of assessment about it. And I think that's why, and I think one of the comments will get to this, I think that's why this fits so beautifully with all this conspiracy theory stuff, because that's the same thing, right? Is that I just make stuff up. I just say all these things, you know, and that's what Trump is doing, right? He's just saying over and over and over again, there's fraud, there's fraud, there's fraud. But there's no fraud and there's no evidence of that. But, you know, it's this phenomenon of you say something enough, people start to believe it.
This is the thing. Like, okay, so I'll try to not nerd out too much about Pentecostalism here. But there was a movement in the 90s, which is when the Vineyard Church movement was kicking in. And nowadays, they're just as conservative as anybody else. But they were very progressive amongst the evangelical, charismatic, Pentecostal world at mm-hmm. the time. Because John Wimber, who started that movement, came from Quakerism. So Quakers, if you gather together in silence and somebody says, I think God might be asking us to do this, then the assumption mm-hmm. is that the gathered community discerns that, yeah. right? And so it's a non-authoritarian way of understanding yeah. discernment. Pentecostalism has embraced an authoritarian way. So instead of, this is why this episode is called Thus Saith the Lord, because the idea is someone says, Thus Saith the Lord, and it's taken as authoritative unless you can prove otherwise. Mm-hmm. Part of the movement that happened in the 90s from some movements, and it didn't stick, was just, I remember going to a meeting and they said, well, if you're going to prophesy, you should say, this is what I believe this God might be saying. And you submit it to the body for discernment. That doesn't happen with these groups. And so this authoritarianism that cannot be proven or disproven, it does work just beautifully with fascism. Yeah. Like if you're going to supercharge fascism, you throw some prophets in there and it's great.
Yeah. Well, and to say a little bit more about the history of Pentecostalism and why this bizarre movement to Pentecostalism and fascism is a very strange kind of trail for this to have taken, yeah. right? Is that Pentecostalism began in South Central Los Angeles, right around the turn of the 20th century, and was essentially a liberationist movement. And so it was this idea that, oppressed Black folks could be freed from the oppression of America by direct access to the Spirit.
And very so mystical in the best sense yeah. of the term, that instinct.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, very mystical, very, progressive, very much, as I said, a liberationist movement. And now here we are about 112 years later. And it has become, the vanguard of fascism. And I do think, though, that is rooted in this inability to actually assess what is going on, right? Because it then becomes this very great tool of a fascist movement, right? Is because from the outside, it becomes impervious to any sort of reflection.
Yeah, it's one of my greatest laments because, like, I tell people this sometimes. People don't often know. They're, like, surprised if I say, well, in some ways, I still think of myself as a charismatic. I don't think I ever left the charismatic church. I think it left me because all this stuff, I just believe things too much. Like, I believe that these sorts of things are supposed to be about a community discerning together to become stronger and that the authority of the Spirit, whatever that means, can come up from anywhere within the community. The idea that there's an authoritarian one that you have to listen to is so antithetical to what right. Paul was talking about and what I think the spirit of like the Azusa Street Revival or any of these great mystical movements are about. Mm-hmm. And so that there are not liberationist Pentecostal churches in the United States and generally around the world, Pentecostalism still leans towards this side of authoritarianism, even though there are great exceptions. Very few out in the United States. Bob Ekblad, Anthony Smith, I know some pastors who are there, but it's definitely not a movement. And and this stuff is only making that harder. It's so disturbing. Adam writes, right. Good question. Is speaking in tongues what the kids are calling it these days?
Yeah,
that's what they call it.
That's what they call it.
Catherine writes, it's easy to laugh at the absurdity of QAnon, but it is the kind of bizarre rhetoric that has fueled genocides. And clearly millions yep. of people are jumping on the moral panic bandwagon. How on earth do we counter it?
Yeah. I mean, that's, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday in terms of part of the way that the fascist leaders are successful is that they're buffoons and people laugh at them and don't take it seriously enough. I mean, yeah, this is not funny what's going on right now. I think that how do we counter it in a big sense? That's hard to say. I think in a small sense, I think we need to counter it, one, by having these kinds of discussions and also by strengthening communities of resistance. I mean, I think it's the same way we counter, capitalism and international, global, oppressive economic systems. We have to develop communities of resistance. and we have to orient ourselves to some level of sanity, because the level of insanity out there is really, really high right now. And, you know, I don't say that to create any kind of panic or deeper anxiety, but simply that it's important to name the reality that one is in the midst of. Because if you don't name it, then you can go along thinking, wow, why do I feel so weird? You know, why am I walking around, you know, in this weird fog? It's like, well, there's a reason for that. Yeah. So
I think it's like, I mean, one of the big questions I think we need to tackle is, I don't want people just to have empathy towards white supremacist, Pentecostal, rednecky types, whatever the stereotypes are, and just as a way of saying, oh, they can have a pass. But I think we need to have the empathy that allows us to understand what makes it tick. And it's not just white supremacy doesn't explain everything. Okay. There's, for example, like Pentecostalism is powerful around the world. And part of it is we live in a disenchanted world where people want to believe that God is still present and active in powerful ways. Yeah. Now, Dan and I both agree that God is active and present in powerful ways, but it's way subtler than if going to church where someone is like, I'm the anointed one of God, thus saith the Lord God of hosts, a revival is coming from the north. Like, that's just way in your face. It's reassuring that God is active in bold ways. The alternative is not to poo-poo that and then embrace this sort of like atheistic liberal Christianity, although people who are atheistic Christian liberals, that's fine. But that doesn't work for a lot of people for good reasons. And so I think we have to think, like, what does it really mean? What is it that underneath all the confusion and toxicity, what is their deep yearning and how do we meet that? Mm-hmm. So I think the idea of liberation by the spirit from oppression, like that's, if you say those words, I mean them in one way, someone in like me when I was 16 would have still used those words in an entirely different way. And so I think we have to do some work breaking down the language, understanding what the yearning of the heart is, and start preaching the gospel.
Yeah. Well, and to me, this also, you know, you say that liberal atheistic Christianity is okay. And yeah, I mean, if you want to do that, that is okay.
Yeah.
And though, I do think that we need to critique those churches and basically say, look, not only are you sort of anemically atheistic, but you're just anemic all the way around. And, you know, and that's part of the Pentecostalism, right, is this feeling and sense of power.
Yeah.
Right. Like when I can miraculously speak in other tongues, like that's powerful. That's cool. That makes me feel like, OK, yeah, there's some hope that I'm going to get out of my horrible, oppressed life. And when I go sit there and listen to, you know, bad organ music and a boring sermon, I do not come out of there feeling like I am empowered to get out of my difficult, oppressed life. So I think that we need to create communities of power. And power can look a lot of different ways. But, you know, yeah, there needs to be some concrete hopefulness. And this was one of the things about the monastic movement, right? That it really did. It created communities where, you know, people shared food, you got to eat, there was, you know, cooperative farming. You know, people shared their other resources, and so you could live without starving, and that was good, and that was why it was appealing.
It's interesting though, like just the language of it, because if I just took up Pentecostal charismatic language, like the Center for Prophetic Imagination, we believe in contemplation and radical action, right? So people listen to that, like, oh, that's good. Yeah. But if I said, I believe in spirit-filled movements against oppression, that we might tear the mighty down from their thrones, and that might be spirit-filled people who stand in the Shekinah glory of the Lord. People would be like, what? I just said the damn same thing. It's the same thing, right? So part of it is there's this sort of snobbery. Like I mentioned, you drive past, I've been with people, we've driven past the Pentecostal storefront churches, and people are like, hmm. I'm like, a storefront church is a church of the people. Like, that's not what,
that's
you
cool.
should go,
right.
about that. Or like I've seen posts now about, oh, I heard somebody took communion with Doritos and they're like, oh, I'm like, Dorito is a staple food for some people. It's this a little piece of bread. I mean, I don't know. Like, so there's a snobbery that gets tied up in this that needs to be questioned too. Like, because to me, you could say Paula White is peak whiteness. You could also see sterile liberal atheistic churches that just don't know what they're doing are also peak whiteness. So like, let's not yeah, anyways, I could go off on
that. All right, we're way behind on the comments.
So. Karen has a post here about African angels, but a great dance song. You can follow that. Mm-hmm. Series writes, there is a lot of colonial views on spirituality Paula White displays. Oh, yes. Yeah. American Pentecostalism.
Lots and lots and lots.
Is, yeah. Adam writes, if you say the title of this episode really fast, it sounds like the Sith Lord.
There we go. Lord.
Wow. Sith Lord. Beautiful. Southern North Africa is North America is Mexico. Southern North America is Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there we go. It's a little wink. Comrade, should I be nervous? Trump still may win. It's like he gets away with everything. I mean, we should be concerned.
Yeah, we should definitely be concerned. Yep. And he's not going to win. I mean, he's lost, but we should be concerned that they are going to figure out how to steal the election. Yeah. Yeah, we should be paying a lot of attention to that, putting a lot of pressure on the systems to not have that happen.
Yeah. Series writes, plus from an animist and spiritualist's point of view, spirits, angels, etc., are not an obligation to take action on just anyone's request.
Right.
Amen. The idea that you can command angels is like really not something you find a lot of in scripture.
No, it's the other way around.
No, angels show up to disrupt your whole way of seeing the world. It's like, oh my God, here's an angel. I'm terrified. Why do they have so many eyes? It freaks you out. Like, they tell you something you don't want to know. It upends everything. That's not commanding angels to help Trump. That's just dumb. Adam writes, I'm not holding my breath. And I think we, the people, need to be ready to fight. Yes. I mean, I hope this just becomes an embarrassing chapter and things move along pretty well. But, you know, really lots could happen.
Yeah, a lot could happen.
Laura writes, valid, but I think we are ever vigilant. Much less commanding.
Yeah.
There is a lack of understanding of responsibility, role, and consent in there already. The assumptions about this, about it really becomes, you know, I've said this in previous episodes, for many people, this is a spirituality of authority. It's authoritarianism is the religion. And it's really about figure out how you can get access to having the utmost authority, which is a pipeline to God.
Right.
And so if we're already approaching God as a way of gaining authority over others, then I don't think we're really doing true spirituality at all.
Well, and it's also a reversal of authoritarianism, right? So it's saying that I, you know, as Sirius is pointing out, it's saying I have authority even over angels and God, right? Like I can tell the mystical world what to do. I can also tell all of you what to do, right? And yeah, so it's a total perversion of a healthy order of authority.
It reminds me of all those stories about Hitler going around the world to gather occult items like the Spear of Longinus and stuff,
right?
Which is just much more like it's artifact based, whereas Pentecostal is not so much artifact based, but it's still like this sort of, I'm going to gain the power through these esoteric means to have dominion over others.
Right.
Connie writes, according to two women I knew at the time, I had to speak in tongues before I went to seminary or I would not be able to get through all that would be taught in seminary.
okay, well, you proved them wrong.
I was told that when I went to seminary, I'd lose my faith. Because the spirit doesn't live in seminaries. It's why they're called cemeteries. Like that was the joke, cemetery, seminary, haha. Joseph writes, I've just assumed that in biblical times, speaking in tongues was talking in another person's language intelligibly without prior learning or exposure to the language. Well, that's true. The people argue about this, but it's speaking of the tongues of men or angels. So sometimes, and this is the ultimate out, is if you're speaking in a language that no one's ever heard of, it's like you can say it's a dead language, it's language of angels. And I don't know. I don't think I've ever heard anyone, like I've only heard rumors of people learning to speak Spanish like from nowhere or whatever. It's always something else. So that's why we should be suspicious and not take it at face value, especially when someone...
Does Rosetta Stone have a speaking in angelic language unit?
they could make a lot of money off of that.
They could. Maybe they already are.
Touche. Ron writes, I didn't leave the charismatic movement. It left me. Yeah, me too. I think there's a lot of us out there who feel like we what the heart of it was for us pulled us in a different direction. Everyone else kind of seemed to kind of veer ever rightward.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and as we're talking about, this really is an issue of when we talk about spirituality and our relationship to the spirit, right, which is this invisible intelligence, this non-material intelligence, what is it that we're talking about? I mean, I think, and that's a very important question. And that's, you know, it's something that I've really devoted my entire life to, and that so many people over thousands of years have done the same and have talked about. And that's where this question of discernment and what are the teachings and what are the multitude of practices and how do we really come to understand what we're talking about, right? Because anytime we invoke something that's invisible, I think we need to tread very carefully and lightly because we may have absolutely no idea what we're talking about, including that we may be talking about nothing. So this whole thing, when we talk about the charismatic movement or any of these spiritualist movements, we're dealing with how is it that we human beings are relating to a non-material intelligence and what does that look like and how do we do it in a way that's positive and helpful for people? Not because this isn't just about how can I be the coolest, you know, falling over babbling person. It's like, am I actually being helpful to humanity or not? That's the bottom line.
Yeah. It's like, what are the discernment questions we're going to ask? Does it help us become more loving? Does it make us more mutual? Does it help us look more like Christ? This comment here from James, like court prophets are not trustworthy. Even those in authority know they are lying. It's funny to me. Like you think these people who are thinking Trump is God's anointed and that Paula White is his prophet, they've never read the freaking Old Testament. Even David, like who is supposed to be a man after God's own heart, which is we could dice into that. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But the prophets show up to him to tell him like he fucked up. Like, you know, see this dynamic. So really, we literally have the most of Pentecostal America falling in line behind court prophets.
Yeah, and empire.
They don't have an empire, and they don't have a way of discerning it because it's about having authority and truth as something you grasp rather than the spirituality of Christ that doesn't consider equality with God, something to be grasped, right? Where it's about the fruits of the Spirit are these things, patience, kindness, love. Like those are the fruits of the spirit. You don't see that coming out of Trump. No. So, yeah.
Well, and the entire book of Jeremiah is about this, right? It's sort of the dueling prophets. You know, you have Jeremiah and you have the court prophet, and the court prophet is just like the Trump prophets. They're like, "Hey, King, you're doing great. Everything's fine. You're going to be wonderful." You know, you're going to make Israel great again. All that screwing over the people, like that's going terrific. And Jeremiah is, you know, slogging through the mud with an iron bar wrapped around his neck going, no, you know what? You guys are all toast. And he was the one that was speaking the truth. And the court prophets all got, you know, put in chains and hauled off to exile.
Adam writes, here we are again at how imagination, critical analysis, and discernment under attack and have been for some time. These are the tools of resistance, agency, and protection from fascism. Amen. And to me, religion that should serve in a lot of these should be about discernment and analysis and not be enemies to those things. Bill writes, there's a great Facebook group called Pentecostals for Peace and Justice. Yep. They stand against the authoritarian charismatic Pentecostal move.
Cool.
Series writes, we need eminist thinking, original system, ecological thinking, and in Pentecostalism, mysticism. Without that integration, a lot of spiritualism gets co-opted by oppressors and colonialism, just like New Age movements, Pentecostalism, etc. Well, and even just saying that, like it shows the colonial thinking of Pentecostalism. If you start talking about animism positively, I mean, you see this all the time. That's what demonic means to most Pentecostals is that. Rather than saying demonic means having too much power or calling colonialism demonic or even slavery. Like, they want to call the religion of the slaves demonic, not the religion of the slave owners demonic. And that's the problem right there. Faith writes, submissiveness is one of the highest values in the charismatic movement. Anyone who Disney's is labeled with a demon.
I think maybe denies that.
Okay. Dissents.
Yeah. Dissents. Yeah.
Autocorrect. I mean, there's a lot of people talk about Disney being demonic too, though, so that kind of works. God is active in powerful ways and Jesus is black. The latter should reframe the former for folks. You say that, and it's amazing when people lose their damn minds. So
all whatever little minds they had left. Yeah.
We should send a copy of James Cone's God of the Oppressed to every Pentecostal church in America, and then staple the pastor's eyes open and make them read it. Maybe not literally staple it.
Have the spirit open them.
Yeah. Command the spirits in the heavenlies to hold open their eyes so they might see the truth. It's like that. Yeah, anyways, I could go off on that. Ceres writes, being spiritually gifted does not guarantee having depth of character by any means. Herod tried to use astrologers, magi, who turned on Herod. CK writes, but don't you think that some of this is just theater? Some of these big players is, and all this is just men making money at the expense of the ignorant? Oh, yeah. There's tons of that in religion.
Yeah.
Tons of that. Adam writes, and here we land again at how... Oh, we already saw that one. Oh, we already...
Came up twice.
Okay, here we go. Walter Wink's work is much needed at this time. For those who haven't read Walter Wink, William Stringfellow is another thinker who talk about the principalities and powers, reframe the how we might understand demonic reality in a way that's more socio-political, but still takes the New Testament seriously. Good stuff. Adam writes, the idea that you can control an army of angels should reveal the true nature of a religion for everyone. We have seen this revealed time and time again, this evil sort of magic and intent that should tell us the God they praise is not the God they say it is. Think about bulldozing ancient burial grounds and building highways through areas of power, and it's all justified by the religious superiority. Whether you take this literally or not, I think it is something religious folk. It trails off from there.
I need to think about. Yep, it's great.
A final word from James. Prophets are supposed to speak truth to power, not for it.
Boom. That's right. All right.
Closing sentiment.
Well, thanks, everybody. Great great comments, great conversation. And we'll be back tomorrow.
Are we talking about putting what it means to put Biden's feet to the fire?
Yes. Now we're going to roast Biden.
We'll have a good conversation.
All right. Bye.